Hi, I'm Eric Etter, and I'm with Dr. Raju. And today our topic is Bhakti Yoga. Today is February 27th of 2005, and Dr. Raju has out of his graciousness, given us the opportunity to talk about Bhakti Yoga. So the first question we're going to be looking at is, what is Bhakti Yoga? Dr. Raju.
Okay, thank you. What is Bhakti Yoga? These terms, Bhakti and Yoga, have evolved out of the practices which answer questions regarding the identity of human being. Identity questions have always been one of the important area in religious practices as well as in some philosophical inquiries. The question of who I am, where I came from, and where I go. Answers to these questions, depending on the discipline and our world view, have given rise to different disciplines and inquiries. In terms of the Bhakti Yoga, while they recognize the totality of life as nature and an expression of nature, they have recognized in the expression of nature there is something which cannot be captured by only natural laws. Laws of nature, yes, they are, but then there is something which is beyond nature, which has become a part and process and parcel of nature, and yet is struggling to assert that it is not constrained or limited by the natural laws. So Bhakti Yoga is one way of answering this question. How one is part of nature, conditioned by nature, and yet one is not conditioned by nature. One has something more than what nature allows us to do or recognizes that we are human beings. In that quest, the notion of liberation or notion of moksha, as in Sanskrit we call, Bhakti Yoga has become one method of trying to cope with these questions. Are we simply a product of nature? If we are simply a product of nature, what happens to us when natural laws break down or end their functioning? What will happen to me? These answers are not answered by only the natural laws, and they begin to draw our attention to the presence of a law which is not bound by natural laws. To communicate that presence of the spirit, they have used names like God. They have used names like something that is beyond natural law. They have used names like there is nothing. When natural laws are taken care of, what is the residual is nothing, nothingness. So these are all various ways in which people have attempted to look at the nature of identity. So when we talk of Bhakti Yoga, then we are answering these questions of identity, sense of belonging, sense of relationship with the other, sense of the relationship with the I and the you and these kinds of questions. Yoga means again putting together in a way, cohesive way, which based on certain assumptions, based on certain faith principles, we answer these kinds of questions. The basic approach of Bhakti Yoga in the theistic tradition has been evolving in terms of there is one creator and we are all created by the creator. We belong to the creator, and what are those terms and conditions under which we would like to belong to the creator? In answering these kinds of questions in the theistic tradition, Bhakti Yoga has become a very powerful and a very useful way of community building. When we say we are all together, we are all children of God, all of us belong to God, God takes care of them. Even when a person is suffering or is helpless, still we have a hope and a feeling that God is there to take care of the problems of that person. So these types of hopeful, helpful and strength-giving messages have always come from the Bhakti tradition, the Bhakti Yoga tradition. In different religious traditions, if we survey, we see human culture has one way or the other of expressing this Bhakti tradition. It may be centered around a human being, it may be centered around certain notion of what that great being is, the great creator is, and the notion of how we are related to that great being, whether as children, whether as any other type of relationship. So Bhakti Yoga then is a way of communicating to human beings the terms and conditions of the sense of belonging. So given this approach to the nature of Bhakti Yoga, then next question comes, what is the practice of Bhakti Yoga? In Bhakti Yoga practice, they have used emotions as the main mechanism, main communicative medium for establishing or understanding or cultivating the relationships. They have recognized how the natural laws have given rise to a kind of relationship. For example, family is one of such relationship. So everyone is familiar with a father, mother, or the parentage, and then the sibling, the brothers and sisters and so on, and even parents, grandparents and so on, or other kith and kin. These have become a biological and a socio-biological ways in which we understand our relationship. In Bhakti Yoga, the practice of Bhakti Yoga has used this mechanism of a family concept. That is where the notion of father God or mother goddess, and then we are all children of God, all of us are brothers. These notions have been used to relate to that creator. So the practice of Bhakti Yoga then starts with this basic concept of family. There is another family to another world where we are all together under conditions, and that condition is absolute love, absolute acceptance, absolute non-differentiation. This is how they have began their understanding of the nature of love. In human terms, our relationship embedded in affection and emotion always talks of different kinds of love. And a father and a daughter, a son, we have a term for that kind of a love. A brother and a sister, there is a different kind of a love. A husband and wife, there is another way of looking at the love relationship. Between people who are not legally or even institutionally recognized as husband and wife, but yet they have certain relationship based on their sexual orientation or gender distinctions, gender attraction. We have another name for those kinds of love. And then we have also the relationship based on fear as an emotion. When we say there is one person or an institution which holds its control over my life and death, it may be a state or it may be another type of an institution, then the notion of fear is used, inflicting pain. So in order to avoid the inflicting of the pain, I begin to relate to that agency in a way that I will not become a victim to those kinds of fears. So fear is another emotion that has been used in bhakti tradition also. So the notion of love, the notion of fear, these have been the two emotional mechanisms that have been used from time to time in different circumstances for practice of bhakti yoga. For example, when we begin to talk that God is not pleased with my behavior, what will happen to me? Say, you will go to hell. You will experience lots of pains. So the creation of the notion of Yama or a judge, these are all brought in order to make my behavior acceptable to certain standards. So we invoke the force of fear there. In some other cases, we don't use fear, but we use affection and positive love as a motivating way to either cultivate a particular behavior or extinguish an undesirable behavior. And that is where the notion of father is introduced, notion of mother is introduced, and the notion of brotherly, sisterly love, fraternity, these kinds of relationships are introduced. So, in the practice of bhakti yoga, we will see how these human relations, human emotions, become the basic ingredients for practice of bhakti yoga. And in practicing this bhakti yoga, which is essentially managing the emotions, we are working at the level of emotions mainly, which is very common. Intellectual, logical, inquiry-mindedness, investigative-mindedness are minor here. We don't expect them. But we always recognize in every human being this affiliation, filial, or friendship, or sense of relationship. These are the basic relationship. We would like to work with these things. Conceptualization of the logic of using reasoning as the basis for communicating certain ideas, they become minor. The major leading emotional force in bhakti is these affections and fears. When these affections and fears are transferred to a supreme being, a controller, a provider, a dispenser, the providence, and so on, then we begin to define the nature of the practice of Bhakti Yoga. The main methods available for human beings is not logical analysis, conceptual analysis, or calculative mechanisms, but it is emotional expressions. That is where fine arts become the main medium for Bhakti Yoga. It may be a cry for help. It may be an acknowledgement of the fulfillment of certain things that happened to me. I account that this has all happened because of the grace, because of the love, because of the kindness of that great being. So I begin to compose and relate to that great being using my verbal expressions. So they become the songs of my expression of need, my expression of the fulfillment, my joy of enjoying the benefits, and so on. So in Bhakti Yoga, we have these fine arts. It may be verbal, may be poetry, or it may be music, or it may be painting, it may be dancing, it may be various ways of celebrating through different kinds of our own consumption behaviors. It may be food. The way that I would like to develop my food system, I would like to offer that food to that great God. I think whatever that I am getting is from that God. So, depending on the sources of my joy, which are sensory, sensual, I now begin to bring in or place in the supply and demand and the fulfillment of those desires the notion of God. So everything has now come from God. Everything has to go to God. Everything I have to receive from God. If we use strictly the natural law, I say rain has come because of certain atmospheric or climatic changes. The rain has not come because of those atmospheric and other variations. But for a Bhakti Yoga practitioner, in the center of these natural laws, there is one that controls. And I always attribute to that God. If I pray to God, rains will come. If I don't pray to God, that natural law is affected, and then because of my fault, it has happened. Now if I begin to invoke God and wait for God's grace, things will straighten out. So all natural calamities that may happen, whether it is earthquake or disease or outbreak of war or outbreak of any other type of very destructive type, now when I introduce the notion of God, then these natural laws become operative through this notion of God. So then I feel that I can overrule these natural laws by invoking God. So notion of God has been used in Bhakti Yoga to deal with natural laws also. That is where when everything has failed, we pray. The best example is death. When death occurs, I say that God is there to take care. And I pray to God so that I can be healed or another person can be healed. If that person cannot be healed, that person dies, then still I have the satisfaction that that person is with God. So, for healing and for purposes of giving a sense of peace, sense of not losing that person or that particular individual, I always invoke God. When that person is with God, I have not lost him. So, notion of God has been used in order to fill in the failures of even natural laws. That way, life goes on, even when destruction and deprivation is there, so that people will be able to renew their own power and then wait for another opportunity to see certain sense of justice, certain sense of amelioration or compensation or reward is there. Therefore, I have the greatest faith that nothing will happen unless God wills it. If anything that happens, that is the will of God. So much so, I am put in the strong sense of fearlessness, strong sense of hopefulness. This has been the contribution that has come to Bhakti Yoga, and the practice of Bhakti Yoga is to be seen in that context. Then, what are the benefits of Bhakti Yoga? The benefits of Bhakti Yoga, again, is related to the practice. For example, what is the practice of Bhakti Yoga? If you go to the details, I am generalizing across religious traditions, because human family has developed religion as one of the methods to deal with uncertainties, with deal with various types of situations. So they have developed their practices around the notion of God, the presence of God, and institutionalized those practices in building various holy places, establishing the notion of sacredness. Notion of sacredness and investing the sacredness, whether it is in building a structure or recognizing a person. That means now we look at the beings which are creations of God. So it may be a river, it may be a tree, it may be a stone, it may be any other or a human being. Then we begin to attribute the presence of God around these natural things that we are living with, but attribute them with that supernatural or extra natural, something beyond what it seems to be. So this type of a practice gives human beings some benefits, and those benefits are when anything that goes on in the society or in nature, it becomes a source for me to take shelter, a sanctuary, as we say. So when law and order of a particular society inflicts a king or a government or some other coercive power inflicts certain things on me, I would like to go to this religious or this worship or this devotional place, a sacred place, and invoke, and even I accept that as the presence. So when a person inflicts on me, deprives my rights, then I don't give up. I begin to hold on to my faith, even when it means deprivation, destruction, even death. So this is one of the ways in which humanity has derived the benefit of Bhakti Yoga for holding on and perpetuating certain positive values for life. After that episode, those people who laid down their lives, they become a source of veneration and source of respect for us. So martyrdom and other various ways in which we begin to celebrate, we begin to acknowledge our gratitude. So those are all the benefits for humankind to preservation of certain values, positive values of life. Benefits of Bhakti Yoga for that individual who practices Bhakti Yoga is to give that person a sense of belongingness, even when every other sense of belongingness is broken. Even when family is broken, even when my own loved one is not able to take care of me, even when the market system in which I am depending breaks down, even at that point I am able to carry on, I am able to sustain myself, I may wait till the hope is fulfilled. The staying power, these are all the benefits of Bhakti Yoga. When everything fails, still there is one unfailing source for me. So this has been illustrated in various stories, in various legends, mythologies, and Bhakti Yoga is full of such type of narrations. And Bhakti Yoga is full of the narrations of what we call miracles also. So miracle becomes one important element in Bhakti Yoga. People develop their faith and wait till certain things happen. Even when they do not happen, they expect that it will happen another day, another day. Don't give up hope. So this type of the capacity to stay on, to sustain, to withstand any type of pressure that is brought on a human being, to hold on to the values. Humanity has been benefited by these kinds of approaches of Bhakti Yoga. And then for individual, when this kind of a power comes, then a human being has the capacity to transform or reform or even revolutionize the situation. When we talk of Bhakti Yoga, as I mentioned, it is not merely a particular form of what I believe in, but the kind of emotions and then values that I carry. Even in political revolutions, when people have subscribed to values like democracy, values for human rights, values for struggling against an oppressor, always these people have developed their disciplines using Bhakti Yoga as one of the basic mechanisms. And the benefits, personally they have gained, and they have passed on those benefits to the humanity. Those people may not enjoy the freedom or enjoy the liberation effects. They may not enjoy even longevity and then the security that comes with that. But the coming generation gets the benefit of it. So in that sense, the benefits of Bhakti Yoga are not conditioned by only one lifetime or one individual. They are for the whole humanity and till the end of time. It is not conditioned by time, neither it is conditioned by any space limits. Those are the universal values of Bhakti Yoga, and they summarize this universal value in terms of love. And when love is unconditioned, love is free from any conditionalities, that they call bhakti. What is bhakti? Bhakti is that where our emotions are located in a feeling which is not bound by any conditions. It is prepared to give up one's own personal interests, but then I affirm the presence of that emotion. That is the highest state of bhakti. Bhakti itself is to be seen in different kinds and different degrees. When it is limited under certain circumstances for certain purposes, then we see that it has to give place to another one. And that happens. But when a person develops the notion of bhakti unconditioned, then that is the highest achievement a human being can make. So Bhakti Yoga benefits are several. They may serve a limited purpose also for human beings. And for example, patriotism, when we begin to talk about, that is also an expression of bhakti. But there the notion is limited to certain territorial or certain kind of limited values. When a soldier dies in a battle, fighting for a particular power or an order of society, then that person has died not in vain, but in order to protect and preserve and perpetuate these values. So we celebrate it. So that is a limited way, but then it still has a value there. The benefit of Bhakti Yoga is there. Otherwise, that person cannot really put his or her life to the end of the struggle. So the benefits of Bhakti Yoga, both in terms of the life as we live here and the life that is eternal, which is not bound by this system of society or system of nature, the biology, the chemistry, the physics and everything else. There is an eternal life. That is where people have invoked the presence of God unconditioned by anything that is natural. It is above nature. What are the results of Bhakti Yoga? The results of Bhakti Yoga is to empower people who, for certain purposes or for certain situations, feel either weak or conditioned. Bhakti Yoga practice provides them the strength to empower themselves and grow, so that they can equally assert and achieve what their goals are. The results of Bhakti Yoga are to satisfy the person to achieve things at a standard where that person feels that life has fulfilled. So the hope is there, and then the capacity to renew the strength and then renew their resources, renew their instruments, renew their materials that are necessary to organize themselves. These are all results of Bhakti Yoga. What are the effects or indicators of Bhakti Yoga? The effects and indicators of Bhakti Yoga are, one, loyalty. A person becomes loyal to a value or to a symbol and then holds on to those symbols, whatever may be the consequences. So those are the indicators of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga always indicates a sense of loyalty, sense of unquestioned stability. One can count on that person. One can count on that person's honesty. One can count on that person's sense of availability and accessibility. Sense of sharing. Sense of sacrifice. These are all various indicators of Bhakti Yoga. They are prepared to give up their lives, they are prepared to share their wealth, they are prepared to share their knowledge, they are prepared to share their whatever limited conveniences or facilities they have. So this sense of sharing, sense of caring, sense of assuring that one is always accessible and available is the indicator of Bhakti Yoga. Very commonly, we bring in the notion of mother and father in Bhakti Yoga. How they care, how they care for their children. Even at their own inconvenience or discomfort, they are prepared to sacrifice, they are prepared to forego, they are prepared to hope for something so that their hopes are continued in the lives of their children. So this kind of rational and a futuristic hope is one of the indicator of bhakti yoga. And then when we look at all these things, I have talked in very general terms. If you begin to focus on some systems, certain symbols, certain types of expressions in fine arts and all other type of human activity, you see the touch of bhakti yoga. And then that is a detail that we can go through. And then we have to accept certain systems, religious systems, belief systems, value systems, and then systems of language, linguistic systems, and the different code systems. All those become important, and they are very specific, and we can go into details of each one of them as an illustration of how bhakti yoga has been working and how that bhakti yoga gets degenerated. That is also another aspect we have to see. In the name of bhakti yoga, a lot of degeneration has taken place in human development. You may call it superstition. You may call it simply a fanaticism. Fanaticism is another degeneration of bhakti yoga. It has used that power of yoga, wherein people, when they use it for a particular purpose without getting clarification, then there are some very, very strong undesirable effects on society. So those are all details again. At what point it gets degeneration, at what point it gets very, very destructive, at what point it gets very costly, and in terms of how other powers are becoming a handmade for these types of exercises, including the state power. When state power is used for this bhakti yoga, then we would like to say, no, there is a division between church and state, church, religion and politics. We would like to separate them. So the uses and misuses of bhakti yoga is also very important. We should become aware of that. How in the human history it has gone on, and how challenges have come, and how new religions have come as a result of that. One system of religion, one system of symbols is perceived as not desirable. Therefore, an alternative, another language, another symbol, another concept. And again, they use basic bhakti yoga principles. Democracy, if you say, we would like to spread democracy around the world, then that becomes another way of bhakti yoga in a political institutional framework. So when we begin to say communism is not right, there again, at some point it was hailed, and afterwards it got degenerated. So use of bhakti yoga, whether it is in religion, or whether it is in the state, or whether it is in the economic market system. We can consider capitalism itself or corporate methods of managing things as a case of bhakti yoga. Loyalty they want. They would like to reward them. So how up to some point it works, and afterwards it becomes a source of undesirability, and then it has to break down. So this is the dynamics of bhakti yoga and different framework of human needs. But when it comes to God, which cannot be seen, which is everywhere, and we belong to that, generally when we talk of Bhakti Yoga only, we are referring to this type of a situation. But the elements of Bhakti Yoga can be seen in other frameworks. The sociology of family, the sociology of state, the sociology of the market, and different other types of systems in which we are operating. So there I stop for my today's talk on Bhakti Yoga.
I have one question for you, Dr. Raja. Yeah. How would a non-theistic or Advaita Vedanta bhakti work?
As I mentioned earlier, basic questions of Bhakti Yoga are sense of identity. Who am I? To whom do I belong? When I begin to raise these questions, I begin to define myself in such a way that I and the other and the you, these are the terms, the I, the other, and the you. You, in a sense, directly I am interacting with some person. When I begin to see the triangle of these three terms, the I, the you, the other, or the it, in Advaitic tradition or atheistic tradition, the notion of the I is examined in such a way that it gets freed from any conditionalities, conditionings. I am not a biological being. I am not a political being. I am not a political animal. I am not an economic animal. I am not even a religious animal. So why I am using these things? So the notion of clarification of the I identity is taken to the extreme using the logic and the assumptions. And when a person begins to free oneself from those type of conditionalities, even the notion of God becomes one way of conditioning me. So the other now is not recognized in terms of the God notion. There is someone who is a creator. There is something that was created. There was some motive in that creation. These also being questioned. So the other is freed from that notion. And the you means the person or the being with whom I am interacting. That you is seen not as a functional, as a role functioning individual with some characteristics of certain skills, certain status, certain age or demographic or other type of backgrounds. So I am freeing now myself with the I am freeing myself with the other, I am freeing the notion of the you. So when all those conditionalities of these three terms are freed, then what is then is an unconditional nature of the being, which is not separated as the I, as the you, or as the that. That is the bhakti. That is known in Advaitic tradition as para-bhakti, it is called. Bhakti, or a relationship which frees itself from any kind of a relationship. That is how the non-theistic notion is cultivated in bhakti. And then it's the terminology. Even if a non-believer in a creator or a teacher, I have not yet come across a non-believer in teacher. Even in Buddha, we accept Buddha as a great teacher. In Jain tradition, we accept Mahavir and other people as great teachers. So, the acceptance of the other as the source of enlightenment and my relationship to that particular person. And eventually, the teaching is, if you begin to cultivate these qualities, then there is no difference between the teacher and the person. Everyone is a Buddha. Everyone is a Jina. This question, when it comes, that is the highest expression of the bhakti. So, whether it is Buddha bhakti, or Jina bhakti, or Christ bhakti, if you would like to use that word, anything that I adore, then we will be able to see its final expression is in removing all these conditionalities. That is bhakti. That is parabhakti, it is called. It is going beyond any limitation. Towards the practice, people have to start from where they are. Then their dedication or loyalty is to a teaching. Loyalty is to a book. Loyalty is to a symbol. Loyalty is to the people who are cultivating those things. So that is where Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, I am just interpreting it. Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, Dhammam Sharanam Gacchami is a way of relating to these entities. So when that gets fulfilled, the enlightenment comes in such a way that those relationships themselves are followed, as it were. No more they are there. No more there is any distinction.
Thank you, Dr. Raju, and this will conclude the talk on Bhakti Yoga.
Thank you.